This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from South Korea.
Good evening from Osan Air Base, the American base, just a few minutes flying time in one of these jets behind us to the DMZ. We come to you from South Korea tonight after President Trump yesterday dramatically turned up the heat over North Korea's nuclear threat, saying the U.S. is prepared to confront the Kim Jong-un regime alone. The president, just days ahead of his high-stakes meeting with the Chinese president, telling the Financial Times, if China is not going to solve North Korea, we will. Also tonight, NBC News has learned the U.S. government believes an underground nuclear test by North Korea could happen at any time. And so tonight, we're getting an inside and exclusive look at how U.S. forces here are preparing to deal with a growing threat. In a moment, we'll take you to the underground location where the U.S. monitors activity in North Korea. But first, NBC's Richard Engel with what's at stake in this region.
Kim Jong-un. He's unpredictable, critics say vain and vindictive, with an expanding nuclear arsenal. And tonight, there are growing signs he could spark the first global crisis for President Trump.
The Korean Peninsula is a tinderbox. Any miscalculation could result in a conflict that affects American troops.
Just last month, Kim Jong-un's regime stepped up testing its missiles, which can already reach both South Korea and Japan. North Korea said it was practice for targeting U.S. bases in Japan and the 46,000 American personnel stationed there. The nightmare scenario? If North Korea can miniaturize a nuclear warhead and put it on a missile that could reach the West Coast. Intelligence officials tell NBC News the U.S. would consider military action to prevent that. On Friday, Defense Secretary James Mattis issuing this warning to North Korea.
Right now, it appears to be going in a very reckless manner, and that's got to be stopped.
But the North Korean dictator has a high tolerance for risk, like deploying, Malaysia claims, two assassins to kill Kim Jong-un's half-brother inside a crowded Malaysian airport by rubbing the world's most powerful chemical weapon in his face. And who's checking North Korea's behavior? China has been mostly quiet. And South Korea's president was thrown out of office on corruption charges. So now the Trump administration is talking bluntly, refusing to rule out preemptive strikes. The message to Kim Jong-un, don't push too far. But the tough talk could actually help the North Korean regime, reinforcing the propaganda it feeds its people that it needs to be strong to resist American aggression. Lester?
We're also getting rare insight, Richard, into Kim Jong-un's readiness to use nuclear weapons against the U.S., a stark warning from a former diplomat who last year became the most high-profile North Korean defector in decades. Taeyong Ho says Kim is desperate and would not hesitate to strike.
So do you think that he would launch a preemptive strike if he had the weapons and the missiles, that he would do it?
Once he sees that there is any kind of sign of, you know, a kind of attack or imminent threat from America, then he would, you know, use his, you know, nuclear weapons, you know, with ICBM.
Tae was serving as North Korea's deputy ambassador to the United Kingdom when he risked his life to defect and speak out against the regime, which puts the focus back on U.S. military options. Unlike most other Air Force squadrons, the fighter units here at Osan don't really prepare to ship out and deploy to war in some far-off place. If war starts for them, it will happen in plain view. The adversary, North Korea, is at their doorstep. Tonight, an exclusive look at the ominous threat and how they prepare every day to confront it.
A U-2 spy plane taxis toward takeoff as dawn breaks over the Korean Peninsula this morning. Its pilot fitted in a NASA-like pressure suit to withstand the 8-hour-long mission at soaring altitudes it will take him near the edge of space. With North Korea's unsettling ambitions and rhetoric rising, demand for these intelligence missions is high.
It's a constant tempo. We're very busy all the time. In the last 10 years, we've been the busiest we've ever been in this airplane.
The distance from Osan Air Base to North Korea is about equal to that from Baltimore to Washington, less than 50 miles. The base's slogan, ready to fight tonight, because it could happen that quickly.
Everybody on the installation has to know very quickly where they need to go, where they need to have their gear, but most importantly, what role that they do in a warfighting environment.
Patriot missile batteries defend the base from North Korean ballistic missiles. Preparations for chemical attacks are constant. Air crews hone their combat readiness.
We've been granted rare access to the Air Operations Center deep underground, the place where North Korean missile launches are first detected. This facility is so critical, war planners say it is the number one target of the North if hostilities break out.
Thus, what we're allowed to show you is highly restricted. Suffice to say, layers of sensors give these American and South Korean operators a very detailed view of threats that they'll have minutes to react to.
When you see a missile launch from the north, you have to know whether it's coming here or Seoul or going harmlessly to sea pretty quickly.
We do. Time of flight is pretty short, but we have great capabilities all throughout this peninsula that are ready to respond.
The American commanders here say their prime mission remains deterrence, but they're ready to act if necessary.
If North Korea launched a rocket, and if we did not know whether it was a satellite or a warhead on top, we, the United States, would likely try to shoot it down. In response, North Korea will try a number of things, in part by sending artillery fire into South Korea. And right away, you have a major conventional war on our hands.
While the posture of the 28,000-plus American military personnel has not outwardly changed, the level of tension certainly has.
I've never seen greater concern from a regional perspective of the threat that is being posed by North Korea.
I'm looking at his wingtips.
Back at Osan, racing at nearly 100 miles an hour inside a chase car that monitors the ungainly U-2's takeoff, we can only guess at the spy plane's destination in search of answers about a secretive and unpredictable adversary.
The U.S. Air Force has contingency plans in the event of hostilities. They would bring in other squadrons, other units from different bases around the Pacific. Also overseas tonight, a race to find out who is behind a horrific bombing in the subway in Russia. At this hour, the death toll stands at 11. Dozens more are wounded after an explosion in the metro in St. Petersburg as Vladimir Putin visited nearby. President Trump is reacting, and we get the latest from NBC's Kelly Kobiea.
Tonight, Russian investigators are hunting for whomever was behind this massive blast. A bomb packed with shrapnel, so powerful it shredded train doors and shattered windows. Survivors comforting bloodied and dazed commuters 130 feet below ground, the tunnels filling with smoke. Witnesses said they saw someone throw a bag in the subway car before it left the platform. There was a huge bang, this woman said. I was sitting next to a metal railing, and I think it saved my life. The explosion at 2:40 in the afternoon. The train was between two stations. Hours later, a second device was found at another station and disarmed. All of it happening while President Putin was in St. Petersburg, his hometown. Offering condolences, vowing to find answers. The prime minister calling it a terrorist act. President Trump also speaking out.
Terrible thing. Happening all over the world. Absolutely a terrible thing.
Russians on planes and trains have been terrorist targets for more than a decade. Most recently in 2015, ISIS terrorists blowing up an Egypt air flight filled with Russian tourists. St. Petersburg had been spared. Until now. Kelly Kobiea, NBC News.
Now to the home front and a collision course of the United States Senate. President Trump's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court is one step closer to confirmation tonight. But Democrats now have enough votes to block him unless Republicans change the rules to get the nominee through. Our justice correspondent Pete Williams explains this historic fight.
2 months after Donald Trump nominated federal judge Neil Gorsuch, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved his nomination.
The nomination will be reported to the floor.
11-9, all the Republicans voted yes.
If Judge Gorsuch is unacceptable to our Democratic colleagues, there will never be a nominee by this president that you will find acceptable. Never.
Every Democrat voted no.
No.
But the opposition has as much to do with Gorsuch as it does with Merrick Garland, the federal judge nominated by President Obama, who never even got a hearing.
What a shameful stain on the proud history of this committee.
Democrats say Garland's treatment broke longstanding Senate traditions, so they're preparing to break another tradition, mounting the first ever partisan filibuster for a Supreme Court nominee. These days, filibusters aren't like the climactic scene in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
And I'm going to stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
But under Senate rules, it would take 60 senators just to head one off and agree to consider Garland's nomination. And Republicans with 52 members don't have the votes to clear that hurdle. Solution? Simply change the rules, ending the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees, an action known as the nuclear option.
We will not have a successful filibuster of a Supreme Court nominee, because if we have to, we will change the rules, and it looks like we're going to have to.
That showdown comes at the end of the week. His supporters hope Judge Gorsuch could be sworn in on Saturday. That would give him time to hear and vote on the final 13 cases of the Supreme Court term. Lester?
Pete Williams at the Supreme Court tonight, thanks. And while all that drama plays out in Washington, President Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner is overseas on a surprise visit to Iraq. NBC's Hallie Jackson with more on why Kushner's trip is raising some eyebrows.
The president's son-in-law and top advisor in Iraq tonight on a surprise trip with the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Jared Kushner, thousands of miles from Washington, missing meetings at the White House with Egyptian leaders to talk instead with the Iraqi prime minister.
The right person to be in Iraq is a person that the president will listen to.
It's unusual Kushner would travel to Iraq before the Secretary of State, a sign of Kushner's growing influence as he juggles a portfolio that also includes Middle East peace talks and overhauling the federal government.
He has a team that he oversees, and I think there's a lot of areas that he has been working very diligently on behalf of the government, on behalf of the president's agenda.
Kushner at least seems to have influence with the president. As a diplomat, that's the first thing you look for.
The White House argues the Secretary of State hasn't been sidelined as Rex Tillerson today stays home, joining talks with the Egyptian president and President Trump.
We're going to be friends for a long, long period of time.
And you can tell it was a notably warm meeting with President al-Sisi after former President Obama never hosted him at the White House, partly because of the Egyptian strongman's abysmal human rights record. President Trump didn't comment publicly about that record, focusing instead on the fight against terror. Lester?
Hallie Jackson of the White House, thanks. Now to that deadly path of destruction across the South. At least five people are dead as a line of violent storms erupts, spawning an outbreak of tornadoes. The damage is severe, and tonight the threat remains for millions. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez is in the storm zone.
The deadly outbreak of storms pummeled nine states, from tornadoes to flash floods to fires. Tonight, parts of the South are shattered. Winds ripping the roof off this Georgia firehouse.
It was insane and it was terrifying.
I think I've got a female inside a vehicle with rushing water.
In Mississippi, a frantic rush to save a woman trapped inside her submerged car. Sadly, rescue crews could not reach her in time. In tiny Glendora, Mississippi, massive heartbreak. The mayor's wife killed when powerful winds toppled a 129-year-old tree onto the couple's house. At least five deaths are blamed on the fast-moving system that swept across the South, spawning at least 17 tornado reports in Texas, Louisiana, and Georgia.
There it is, tornado.
Not just relentless wind and rain.
We heard a boom, bang, like a thunder or something.
But also lightning sparking this massive blaze in Alabama.
Oh, yeah, the wind's picking up.
In hard-hit Louisiana, this man's world came crashing down. 100-mile-an-hour winds flipped this mobile home, killing his 3-year-old daughter and her mother.
I lost everything, everything. I lost my family.
Tonight, these storms are barreling east, with another round expected on Wednesday. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, Carrollton, Georgia.
Back now with new allegations in the sexual harassment scandal plaguing Fox News. New accusers coming forward against ousted CEO Roger Ailes and Fox News star Bill O'Reilly after a report the network paid out millions to settle complaints against O'Reilly. And tonight, one big-name company is pulling its ads from O'Reilly's show. NBC's Stephanie Gosk has more.
Today, a former Fox News commentator accused the network's biggest star, Bill O'Reilly, of sexual harassment.
I knew how to behave, and I simply said, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Wendy Walsh says she refused O'Reilly's offer to go to his hotel room after a dinner discussing her career.
He got very hostile very quickly. He told me flat out, forget any career advice I gave you.
Her appearances on his show, she says, soon stopped. Walsh's accusations were part of a New York Times report revealing Fox News or O'Reilly paid $13 million over a dozen years to five other women who alleged similar harassment. Her accusations come as Fox News tries to move beyond a sexual harassment scandal that led to the resignation of its former chairman and CEO, Roger Ailes.
They made some cosmetic changes, but the current leadership at Fox News is really part of the old guard of Roger Ailes' loyalists.
Bill O'Reilly posted a statement online that reads in part, "Just like other prominent and controversial people, I'm vulnerable to lawsuits from individuals who want me to pay them to avoid negative publicity." As a father, he says he acted quickly when accused to put to rest any controversies to spare my children. Fox News was also hit today with another lawsuit accusing Ailes of sexual harassment. His lawyer called the allegations total hogwash. Meanwhile, management urged Fox News employees to come forward if they have any concerns about behavior in the workplace.
If they are serious about this, they're going to have to change their entire culture.
Tonight, the car company Mercedes says it is pulling its advertising from O'Reilly's show. The scandal Fox News hoped it had overcome continues to take a costly toll. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
A horrifying boiler explosion in St. Louis today killed three people and injured four others. Police say the blast first killed one of the victims at a box factory. Then the sheer force of the explosion sent the boiler, which is about the size of a van, flying for a block where it crashed through the roof of another business and killed two others. The cause is under investigation. Tonight, Harrison Ford is free and clear. Our Tom Costello reports that Ford will not lose his pilot's license or be fined after that airport scare, the actor coming in for a landing on a taxiway instead of a runway at a Southern California airport in February, flying right over the top of a packed passenger jet. The FAA completed its investigation with no punishment for the actor. The White House has released the first official portrait of First Lady Melania Trump, and an accompanying statement says it was taken at her, quote, new residence, the White House. Though for now, she's still living in New York while the Trump's 10-year-old son, Barron, finishes the school year. Finally, tonight, a quick look at our background here at Osan Air Base, an F-16 fighter, and this is the venerable A-10 Warthog with that mean-looking cannon. Usually around this time, we end the broadcast with our Inspiring America reports. Well, here's some folks Inspiring America, some of the folks of the 51st Fighter Wing. Great to have them here. Thanks for coming on. I want to talk to Lieutenant Colonel Torres right now, Nicholas Torres of the 731st Air Mobility Squadron. Got it right?
Got it right, Lester.
You bring folks in and out of here, basically kind of running an airline for this place. What do you tell folks who come to Osan? What should they know about serving in Korea?
They should know that they're continuing a tradition of excellence, working with a great partner ally in Korea, and not to mess it up.
That's it. Don't mess it up.
Don't mess it up.
I think we all get that advice. Well, it's good to have all of you. Thanks so much for what you do, and thanks for being such a great host for our broadcast tonight. We do appreciate it. And that is our broadcast on this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, including our team here in Korea, thanks for watching, and good night.